Okay, our next case for this morning is In Re Factor 8 or 9 Blood Products, also known as Nelson against Bayer Corporation.
May it please the Court, Nicholas Diamond of Leif Cabreza, on behalf of Appellant Adrian Melson and other UK haemophiliacs whose lawsuit was dismissed from the MDL on the basis of forum nonconvenience. This is a case where US companies, using what one of them called WorldThink, made decisions in the US about where in the world to dump their US-made poisonous blood product and make their profits. In addition to the points made in our briefs, I'd like to impress upon the Court three things. One, the evidence is overwhelming that defendants' contaminated blood product infected these UK plaintiffs. Biostatistician Dr. Nick Jewell provided an undisputed expert report to the District Court, which the Court entirely ignored, stating that based on his conservative statistical calculations, there's between an 88 and a 99.5% chance that the plaintiff's HIV infection was caused by defendant's product.
So you're underscoring the word defendant as opposed to products manufactured by companies in the UK or Europe?
Precisely. The second point is the recent enactment of the UK Compensation Act confirms that the UK is an inadequate alternate forum. However much the systems of the UK and US might appear similar, they are not, as Judge Grady mistakenly concluded, indistinguishable. And our third point...
But how on that second point, I'll let you come to the third point in a minute. Piper is a difficult precedent for you on that second point, because one could certainly have said that the legal remedies in Scotland in that case were quite different from the remedies. There was no product liability. There are all sorts of differences that I know you're familiar with. And the UK Compensation Act, Fairchild, do set a fairly high bar, but there's not a non-existent bar for this kind of alternative liability or market share liability in the U.S. It's just a harder case to make, right?
Respectfully, I think that the Compensation Act runs straight through that. The Compensation Act directly limits the exception to buffer causation to asbestos. This is not asbestos.
But what prevents the House of Lords in the next case, in the concentrate case, to say that we've decided it's going to apply here too? It's not like the Compensation Act forbids them from doing that.
Absolutely not. It doesn't. But for three reasons, I think the response is this. Fairchild was dealt with asbestos. Asbestos is a sui generis tort, very different from what we have here. That's one. Two, the House of Lords themselves were conscious in their decision that this was a strictly limited exception. And in fact, Judge Hoffman, one of the House of Lords, one of the Lord Justices, stated in a work, he said that insuperable evidential problems are just the claimant's hard luck. That was in Gregg versus Scott, and also in, which is a supplement, subsequent, House of Lords decision, where the Fairchild exception was not extended. And secondly, in an article that he wrote called Causation, in which he stated that the Fairchild was exceptional.
I wonder if you have run across any cases in the United States where an American court has actually held in a forum nonconvenience analysis that the courts of the United Kingdom are not an alternative forum. Because even if they are an alternative forum, one moves on to balancing the public and private interest factors. I really feel that you're asking us to break new ground here.
I was expecting your question, and clearly the defendants flag it in their briefs, and it's something that we've confronted. We're definitely not asking this court or any American court to find that the UK legal system is inadequate. It isn't inadequate. It's perfectly adequate. It's the mother of, in many respects, it's the mother of the law that we, the law of this land. However, FNC is a fact-specific analysis, and on these specific facts, the UK court is going to be inadequate. I just want to add one additional point in that fact.
But I could just say you are defining inadequate to mean something like doesn't recognize the cause of action. And so one could define inadequate, and I don't mean to pick on particular countries, but let's say, for example, the courts of Somalia or the courts of Sudan are inadequate in an entirely different way if there really isn't a functioning court system in a particular country. That's a much different concept, and I guess we need to decide which of those is the correct one.
Right. Admittedly, I mean, many, many countries whose court system is perhaps in a transitional state has still been found to be adequate. That's for certain. But here, I direct your attention, for instance, to the Second Circuit opinion in Norex last year, in which it said, where an action that can be maintained in the U.S. is foreclosed in the foreign jurisdiction, for precisely this reason, in addressing a different forum nonconvenience challenge, we ruled that an adequate forum does not exist if a statute of limitations bars the bringing of a case in a foreign forum that would be timely in the United States. It's a very similar situation here. They're not saying that, I think in that case it was the Soviet Union, they're not saying that the Russian courts are inadequate per se. We're not submitting that should be your ruling here. We're saying that in this particular instance, if our plaintiffs are ejected from and evicted from the United States courts, they have to refile in England. If they refile in England, they need to, as defendant's own expert stated in his report to Judge Grady, and Judge Grady references it in his own decision. He said, I just want to look for the precise language, essentially, that the plaintiffs have to prove causation against each and every defendant. Well, that's something that's impossible based on these facts in England.
Well, what about the balancing? I mean, suppose one way or the other we get to the balancing factors. You're here on abuse of discretion review, and we have underscored in the past that we give a lot of room to the district court to weigh these various factors. How can we say that Judge Grady's decision was so outlandish that we should find it an abuse of discretion?
Well, that raises my third point, if I may, which is that this entire discussion is misframed. This motion is about defendants' effort to forum shop and essentially avoid the consequences of their American conduct. The three tests that a court has to go through, deference, private and public interest factors, were predicated on Judge Grady's ignoring the legitimate reasons for which plaintiffs used to file in the United States.
What tortious conduct did the defendants commit in the Northern District of California?
They committed enormous tortious conduct. All their decisions and conduct in relation to the decision to dump what they knew to be contaminated blood product was taken in the United States, and the headquarters of one of the defendants is in the Northern District of California. All of the defendants harvested blood in the Northern District of California. I should add that the defendant Bayer itself, in its answer, concedes that documents and witnesses relevant to its policies, practices, and decisions with respect to Factor 8 and Factor 9 are located in the U.S.
How important is it for you to tie this to the Northern District of California per se, as opposed to the United States more generally?
I would say that there are two loci in the United States where this case should be heard, either the Northern District of California or the Northern District of Illinois. The Northern District of Illinois is also the headquarters of one of the defendants, Baxter, only several miles from here, and ARMA has had headquarters or plant here. So to the extent that we have to argue United States as opposed to Northern District of California and Northern District of Illinois, we can, but the fact is that this misconduct took place in the United States.
Did anyone file a motion for a 1404A transfer?
No, but, yes, in the sense that there was an MDL transfer here.
Right, but that was for pretrial, obviously.
Right.
But if one were to anticipate down the road trials after the pretrial proceedings are finished and the cases in the MDL are sent back to the districts from whence they came, one could presumably file a 1404A motion.
Correct.
Well, getting back to the Northern District of California, what interest do you think the citizens have in participating in resolution of the claim? Judge Grady used that as one of the reasons. And what interests do the citizens there have?
Considerable. Judge Grady's conclusion on that point, I think, was predicated on his ignorance of, or his having ignored the fact that there's close to 100% chance that these defendants' blood contaminated these individuals. So these defendants, these defendant corporations, there's a significant California interest. I refer you to Northern District of California decision Marsh, which is in our brief, which talks about the interest that California has in regulating its defendant corporations.
So it's sort of an internal corporate governance interest is what you're arguing? Because I suppose if a California corporation decides to inflict injury on people outside the United States, then California might say, well, why is that our problem?
Well, I think one would say for two reasons. First of all, it's our problem because that company today sends that blood abroad, but perhaps next time it will may send it to Southern California, or maybe within Northern District of California. But a second reason, I lost my train of thought. I'll come back to my second
point. It's okay. The other point that he made about the Northern District of Illinois and the whole jury process that was that it would be a very, very lengthy proceeding if it were a jury trial held here in the United States versus England, where it would be a bench trial. So a much shorter process. How do you want to speak to that point?
Yes, with pleasure. Judge Grady, with respect, consistently inverted the standard on forum nonconvenience. The standard is seeking convenience. He sought convenience abroad when it should be in addressing inconvenience here. The fact that there wouldn't be a jury trial in England is not a factor to be weighed in favor of sending the case abroad.
But in terms of the interests weighed here, the public interest, which he has to look at, certainly the a lengthy trial would be very costly. He was concerned about whether or not the jurors would really be interested in it, and he was looking also at the fact that relief could be brought to the plaintiffs much sooner in a shorter time frame if the case were tried in England.
Let me answer that by coming to my second point that I overlooked before. The second point is that California residents have a significant interest in making sure that their companies continue to flourish. If people worldwide, and I emphasize that this isn't just our plaintiffs are not just UK plaintiffs, but plaintiffs from all over the world, this forum nonconvenience motion affects them, but there are more than 20 other countries of plaintiffs represented. If the view is internationally that American companies can dump their product, California companies or Illinois companies can dump their product with impunity, that has a significant effect on California residents and justifies the time spent in regulating and enforcing that kind of policy.
Okay, if you would like to save your rebuttal time, it's up to you.
I will. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Eugene Schoon on behalf of all the defendants this morning. I'd like to start by saying the plaintiffs have argued strenuously this morning and in their briefs that these cases are different from the cases that have been before this court before and that were before Judge Grady before. In fact, this morning he asserted that there's a 100% chance that we're liable in some sort of collective way to the plaintiffs in this litigation.
I understood them to be drawing the distinction between the first and second generation cases because the second generation cases focused on internal corporate decisions about which countries would receive products and the like and focused less on the more immediate problems of the first generation cases.
Yeah, that's certainly a part of the litigation. Let me explain how these cases, I think, are different and how they're the same. First of all, we, in terms of the legal theory of the case, in terms of what is actually being asserted here, these cases are virtually identical to the cases that have been before this court on several prior occasions and that were the subject of the U.S. litigation.
But the judge says they're not. He says these involve claims of intentional wrongdoing.
In addition to the fact that there are two counts of negligence and a count of breach of warranty. Now, there are allegations of intentional wrongdoing. Those same allegations of intentional wrongdoing, however, were being made in the United States litigation, because while the plaintiffs here are arguing that what the defendants were doing was selling a less safe product in these foreign countries, while they were selling safer product in the United States, the allegation was that we were selling both the unsafe product and the safer product, or however you want to phrase that. There's virtually no difference.
Well, now, I'm just drawing your attention to page 6 of the district court judge's opinion, where he addresses the second generation cases and talks about the allegations of fraudulently concealing the risk and dumping on unsuspecting foreign markets. So, I mean, he does see this as a different case. He understands that.
Yes, I agree, Your Honor, and he does point to that. In fact, when it comes to the forum nonconvenience analysis, and in particular considering the public interests involved here and the public interests of the foreign countries, it's our contention that an allegation of that we somehow intentionally defrauded a foreign government into licensing our product gives even greater weight to the interest of that foreign country in regulating our conduct. That doesn't increase the weight of the California court.
Sure. I want to look at it from the other end of the telescope, though, because I have at least two concerns about the rationale that the district court uses here. One of them is, as I read the district court's opinion, he slips into language in which he places at the public interest level the interest of California as zero as opposed to lesser. First he says, you know, who's greater, who's lesser, and then he starts talking about an unrelated forum. Well, California may be many things, but surely not an unrelated forum, and I'm not sure that that's correct. The second thing that I have a great deal of concern with really stems from Piper, because on the one hand, Piper in the context of governing law says you can't use an unfavorable change of law as a reason for denying transfer, but you also can't use a favorable change of law. And here I would say, by the same token, I'm very uncomfortable with the idea of using the existence of jury trials as a reason to throw cases out of U.S. courts. Yes, we have jury trials. As we all well know, not very many cases actually finally go to a jury trial. They get settled. Other things happen to them. I'm sure you have plenty of defenses that you'll be raising if this goes forward in the United States. But just as a matter of law, to use the mere existence of the institution of the jury as a reason to transfer a case away from the U.S. strikes me as quite troublesome.
Okay, let me try to address that question and then the earlier question about the interest that California has and how Judge Grady dealt with that. I think what Judge Grady understood in looking at this and in undertaking the balancing of the interests was that, and these really do go together, as I think your question suggests, that in considering the public interests here, one has to take into account what burdens will be placed on the forum in which the cases will be tried. He's sitting as an MDL judge, but these cases will be tried in the Northern District of California. That district, he understands as a trial judge who tried one of these cases for 7 weeks, that it's an enormous burden on those citizens, which has to be balanced against or looked at in light of what interest those citizens in the Northern District of California have in the controversy, as opposed to the interest of the local jurisdiction where these cases should be tried.
But, you know, I'm just comparing here on the public interest factors, the section in his opinion which really begins on page 41, where he says the parties differ as to whether California or the UK has the greater interest, and he kind of compares. And then you get over to page 43, and he's talking about the unfairness of burdening citizens in an unrelated forum with jury duty, the Northern District of California, an unrelated forum. It's not an unrelated forum. That's just not sustainable on this record.
Well, Your Honor, we would respectfully disagree to this extent. Although one of the defendants for a period of time had a facility located in the Northern District of California, the fact is that none of the other defendants had a presence there.
Look, you had Cutter meeting at the Berkeley headquarters. You've got plasma centers in downtown Oakland. You have Alpha recruiting donors and using plasma from places like San Francisco. You've got Baxter recruiting people from there. You've got people actually running operations, maybe not headquarters. So you've got a lot of things happening in California. And I have to say, another thing that I found exceedingly odd about your brief was the assumption that if the case was in the Northern District of California, somehow you wouldn't be able to take depositions in other districts in the United States, which would be a great news bulletin to me, since people notice depositions all the time in other districts.
Okay. Let me respond to both parts of that. In the first instance, I think Judge Grady was fully aware of the allegations about the conduct that took place in the Northern District of California, and at least I didn't read his opinion as saying that it was unrelated in unrelated form in the sense that there was absolutely no activity that was alleged to have taken place there. I read Judge Grady's opinion as saying that it was unrelated in the sense of the harm was in the United Kingdom. These patients were treated in the United Kingdom. This is where the regulations took place. This is where potential other defendants could reside.
You may be right, but it's just not what he said. You know, he gets around to calling it an unrelated forum.
And then with respect to your point about the depositions, if our brief can be read as saying that we don't believe that a case pending in the Northern District of California would allow us to take depositions elsewhere in the United States, that's not what we intended.
I
agree with Your Honor. I think our point, though, was that if this case is tried in the Northern District of California, or if we have to conduct merits discovery, we will not be permitted to take depositions in the United Kingdom, at least not in the same.
What you can do, as you well know, is use the Hague Evidence Convention procedures, and the same thing will have to happen on the other side. And I'm sure you also well know that after the Intel decision, it's not at all clear that all of the discovery that has been collected for use in the United States would be accepted by the UK courts. They have vastly different relevance standards than those that prevail in the United States. And I would say it's a very uncertain status.
Yes, Your Honor, although we can't predict what the court would actually do. However, we did stipulate that the evidence collected in connection with this MDL, which has now been going on for more than 10 years, would be usable. Or that we would not object to its use on grounds that it was obtained here.
Right, on grounds that it was obtained here, but you have reserved, clearly, lots of other objections based, it doesn't surprise me that you would do so, but, you know, looking at the UK's civil procedure rules on disclosure and inspection of documents and the like, there are many objections to that evidence that you will have quite available to you that have nothing to do with the fact that it was collected in the United States. So you'll live up to your word. I don't have any reason to doubt that. But there's a lot that will change if this litigation is in the UK because of the different approaches to discovery.
There are different approaches to how cases are tried in the UK. That's certainly true.
The House of Lords has been known to describe American discovery as close to a due process violation per se, and fishing expeditions, and lots of other things.
And that puts us in a very unequal position if we're forced to try the case here, because while our discovery is limited as to the plaintiffs, and believe me, these cases are very, very fact-specific. They depend on how the patient was treated, what he was treated with, when. There are other factors that come into play here. And
that's true in every single case of where there's international litigation, where some of the evidence collection has to happen overseas, whether it's a Hague evidence country or whether it's just simple old letters rogatory. It's just a fact. And we don't have a practice where if there's a foreign party in a case, shipping the case off to the other country for equalization purposes.
We would urge this court to consider, however, that this is not an ordinary commercial case. It's not a case where somebody has been injured in a foreign country in an isolated instance. This goes to the very core of the regulatory decisions that are being made in a foreign country over what medicines will be available and at what cost and availability.
Right,
those are decisions that belong to that country.
That would be true, I suppose, in some instances, but I guess what the plaintiffs are arguing is that if you were defraud, if you were in your own files in your various headquarters in the United States, whether it's in Illinois or California or somewhere else, saying we're not going to give honest information to the UK authorities, that information is here in the United States. UK wouldn't know that you were defrauding it.
But the UK has an interest in whether that is in fact the case, and the UK in fact has the ability to protect its citizens from that kind of conduct if it in fact is true, and they should be the ones to make that decision and have their laws determine what's right for their citizens.
But they haven't made any filings here objecting to this. They haven't invoked the Protection of Trading Interests Act or anything else, have they?
They have not, Your Honor, but we also are hampered in our ability to get further information from them as to what information was available. These are not naive governments. These are governments that have their equivalent to the FDA. They regulate this product. In fact, they even made their own product. They knew fully what the state of the science was at that time, and that's extremely important in considering the public interest here. With regard to the interest of California, to get back to the point that seems to be troubling Your Honor, that was also a fact that came up in the Camel versus Hill-Rom case that Judge Bauer wrote for this court, in which similarly allegations were being made on not only breach of contract but other conduct. And this court said there that even though it was an Indiana citizen who was accused of this wrongdoing, that the Indiana courts had only a passing interest in that, and that in that case, Saudi Arabia was the country that had an interest in the regulation. Here, even more so, this is not a commercial transaction. This is business. This is medicine. This is something that affects the health and well-being of citizens of another country.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I thought you.
And I would just ask the court to take that into consideration, in addition to the factors that Judge Grady considered.
Can you also speak to this impleading of third-party defendants? Was there anything in the record to indicate how many people or British residents might or entities might be considered?
Yes, Your Honor. I can point to a couple of things. In Exhibit B to our motion for forum nonconvenience, we identified, at least for these eight plaintiffs, those other products that were known to have been used. The National Health Service product in particular, and in addition, another product, as well as some unidentified product that we believe was made in the European Union. But more importantly, we believe that what sets this case apart from the U.S. litigation is there the National Health Service does not have sovereign immunity, and there is a potential for impleading them into this litigation if, in fact, it proceeds in tort. So it's not just a product issue, but also other factors that may come into play. I see my time is about up. I would just urge this court to consider the impact that its decision is likely to have on the fact that we have 250 more UK plaintiffs in this case, as well as 3,000 approximately plaintiffs from between 25 and 30 other countries. I know this court takes this into account, but Judge Grady is clearly looking for guidance from this court.
He's looking for guidance. The irony I see in that is comparing that fact to the vigor with which your clients oppose class certification in these cases. But I think Judge Grady is thinking of, you know, lead case strategies and the like that might ameliorate that problem.
My time is up, Your Honor.
And, if you would like to comment, you're free to do so.
Well, we think that Judge Grady, clearly, he took this very seriously, or he would not have written a 60-page opinion and went through a number of factors. There are things that we disagree with, quite honestly. He came to the right conclusion, and the test here is abuse of discretion. It's very hard for me to find any way that Judge Grady could have abused his discretion on this record. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Mr. Diamond? We'll give you 3 minutes because we had a little bit of extra.
Thank you. There are a number of points I want to make in response to the prior discussion. The first is Mr. Schoon just alluded to the 60-page decision of Judge Grady. Of that 60 pages, he spent at least 8 discussing Fairchild and how he expected that Fairchild would apply in this case. I think it bears review and consideration, especially in light of the Compensation Act. Then you asked defense counsel about impleading. The impleading question is predicated on where the blood that contaminated these individuals came from. As I said at the very outset, it's close to 100% likely that this blood came from the United States, these defendants. So even the theoretical, hypothetical issue of impleading falls away in that context. Moreover, Judge Grady, in his opinion, spoke specifically about the possibility of contribution claims at the end of the case. The issue also of discovery, which Your Honor mentioned briefly, not only letters rogatory, but plaintiff's expert, Professor McLean, who wrote the book on which defendant's expert relied, stated that there's no net gain in terms of discovery, whether the case is litigated here, whether it's litigated in the UK. Another issue that I want to address is question of deference that we didn't discuss at the outset, but really affects the weight that Judge Grady applied to plaintiff's forum choice. This court has approved the standard in the Second Circuit of Irigori, which states that the more it appears a foreign plaintiff's choice of forum appears to have been dictated by reasons that the law recognizes as valid, the greater deference that will be given. And Judge Grady paid no deference to plaintiff's valid reasons for selecting this forum. On another issue, forgive me for going scattershot through my issues, but my time is short. Your Honor spoke about the interest that the Northern District of California would have, and I just want to direct you to a case called Plever that was decided in the Northern District of Illinois, in which the court said, regarding the local interest in this controversy, Baxter's corporate headquarters in this district, you'll know, of course, that Baxter's one of the defendants in this case, the presence in this district of several of its top officials purportedly involved in the fraud causing several deaths, and Baxter's facility in Round Lake, Illinois, support the significant interest the Northern District of Illinois has in adjudicating these claims. Accordingly, this factor weighs heavily in favor of denying Baxter's forum nonconvenience motion. Unless you have any further questions, I'll rest there.
No, thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We will take the case under advisement.